It's time for the Dr. Linda Mental Show.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Dr. Linda Mental Show. I'm your host, Dr. Linda Mental, the relationship doctor, and I'm here along with my co-host, who is a guest today, Dr. Norm Mental. And every weekend we're here and we're doing life together, and we're so glad that you've joined us.
Good to be here again. I appreciate it. We have two what are called millennials as our children. We work with millennials all the time. We both teach millennials. It seems like these days we hear so much and we read so much about this generation and how different they are from our generation. And I'm wondering if some people in our audience might agree with what Letitia said about this generation.
Young and money. They're in the age of technology that's expanding. Now they have so much information. They have cell phones. They're at this booming stage of life that Earth has never seen. So they got it made. They got in. They're young during the big technology boom.
I don't know who she is, but I love her voice. I'd like to have her do some voiceovers or something.
You know what? She's characterized the generation in summary form, and a lot of us do that. And sometimes we're not always fair. And I hope we can explore that a little bit in this program.
One of the reasons I wanted you to be on here, Norm, is you have your PhD in leadership, and you have done a lot of looking at the millennial generation, the influence of postmodernism, and how all of this is impacting millennials. This program, it's part one. We're going to understand millennials first, and then we're going to talk next weekend about how that affects the workplace and dealing with millennials in your family and so forth. Millennials are those people that are born after 1984. Some people say that from 1995 on, that's another subgroup of millennials. The first ones are called Generation
Y,
and the second ones are called Generation Z.
We've run out of
alphabet. Then what do we do? Do we start over again? It'll be A. It'll be A or Z1. Regardless of the distinction, millennials have been referred to as the most coddled generation, with helicopter parents who cater to them too much. They're fussed over by marketers. Their college recruiters are after them. They're dissected by people like me, psychologists, trend spotters. But the millennial generation has come fully into its own, and they're going to be our future leaders.
And in fact, are leading in many areas.
They are. They are, because they're in the workplace. So they're often accused of being entitled, narcissistic, self-interested, unfocused, and lazy. And entitlement is a big one. And something we've learned in our prep for this show is that they characterize themselves in certain ways. Our man on the street caught up with a few of the millennials, and the question that he asked was, what word comes to mind when you hear millennial?
Entitlement. I feel as if we live in a world where, or a country where, no one wants to be a loser. When you go play a tournament or you go play some type of game, if you lose, you're still given some trophy for participation. And that seems small, but it can make people grow up to think that even though they don't win, or even though they're not like at the point of where they want to be, they still deserve something. And that's what the millennials are showing me. That's what I think of millennials.
Entitled, because everyone now thinks that they should get everything without having to actually work for it.
A lot of millennials are pretty left-leaning, so a lot of people think, oh, I have a right to health care, and I have a right to a free education, and I have a right to this and that, you know, at somebody else's expense.
It's interesting. You said a lot of people think that they're entitled. Mm-hmm. These were millennials who think they're entitled.
That's what was so interesting. Yeah, we asked him, and those were millennials who are characterizing themselves that way.
And it may sound like a negative characterization, but let's think back. I remember when our son, who is now 26, was 5, and I was asked to coach his little soccer team. We were not allowed to keep score. We were not allowed to keep game summaries and how many games we'd won and how many lost. And at the end of the season, every single kid on every single team in the entire little league got a trophy. And that has now become a cliche that describes this generation, that they all got a trophy. But it was true.
And this was a city league in the Chicago area that we were talking about. The parents on the sideline would get so upset and involved and out of control to the point where the officials had a game and they said, parents, you may not react. You may do nothing but clap when they make a goal. They couldn't yell. They couldn't laugh because people were so out of control. And I think it speaks to that helicopter parenting, as if these kids at the age of 5 were getting ready to do World Cup tryouts or something. Right. It was crazy when you look at that.
And I think that goes to the early stages of hate speech and how you can't be mean to people and you can't say nasty things and you can't react. And this attempt to diffuse any emotion from public discourse. We see now some of the results of all of that in wacky ways.
We see it specifically in the inability to be resilient and to deal with stress, as we'll talk about in a little bit. We also see lots of positives in this generation, but they do have more difficulty coping with stress. And I think that is a part of it, Norm. There's something called stress inoculation, where you let kids feel the results of stress enough that they can start to cope with it. They start to understand what to do. Now, you don't just leave them on a limb and say, well, deal with that. As parents, you coach them along the way. But when you do what they did, which is no interaction, this does not help them with coping. And we're seeing this a lot. And we're going to talk about this more next weekend in terms of the workplace in their interpersonal skills. Have you noticed this in teaching as well?
Certainly. And I think the Letitia lady that we heard earlier was talking about technology. And these are kids who have never not known the internet, most of them. And they've always been involved in technology. And so you look at them walking down the street and their face is in a screen and their thumbs are busy typing away, and all of their friends are virtual or social friends, not face-to-face. So they're not learning those kinds of skills.
We want to look at this to see if these characteristics that we're doing in today's show are fair or unfair. We want you to make up your mind. We're going to give you both sides of this. Think of ways to help or guide this generation and be an influence. That's one of our goals. Most of the research and observations that we do here does not take into account, Norm, that young people who have a strong commitment to Jesus Christ, who have faith, they don't take into account how that influences who they are. And that makes a huge difference.
Well, we've
anybody.
Seen that in our Sunday school class. We have a group. We call it a conversation. It's a 20s group that meet on Sundays. I have to tell you how impressed I am with so many of the young people. I hate to call them kids, but they feel like kids to us. They know the Word of God. They interact in amazing ways. They reach out to their communities. There's a young couple who have just moved into the ghetto because they feel called through sports outreach to work with kids. There's an incredible heart in this generation that we didn't see before.
And let me give you a tidbit of good news as we go into the break, especially when we're looking at Gen Z, those people that are born after 1990. There is a 40% drop in the teen birth rate.
Wow.
Now, that's good news. That matters because teenagers that are in childbearing ages, if they are having kids young like that, that can have long-term effects and negative effects on both the mom and the baby. This is a good thing.
In 2010, Gallup had an article they called Generational Differences on Abortion Narrowing, in which it was noted that support for legal abortion had dipped among millennials. Young people were much more pro-life than their parents were. What about drugs and alcohol? Is there a difference?
More good news. We've seen a 38% drop in teens using drugs and alcohol and abusing them. Both are linked to harmful, risky behaviors like sexual activity, DUIs. The fact that that's going down is good news as well.
Educationally, Gen Z is better educated. More of them are not dropping out. They're graduating from high school on time. It's much better as they move forward for the future of the country.
And one last thing, they're more open-minded.
That's
they're more
true.
Supportive of minorities. There's other positive adjectives that come to my mind, confident, self-expressive, upbeat, receptive to new ideas. And I see a lot more caring about their health and the environment as well.
That's good. After the break, we'll discuss what some researchers think about the challenges are with this group. Stay with us. More to come. Be back in a minute.
Hey, folks. Chris Weigel here to let you know Dr. Linda's on Instagram. Follow her at Dr. Linda Mental.
Are you a mom or a dad trying to do your best to raise a healthy weight child in an unhealthy eating culture? Do you often struggle with how to respond when your child asks if she is fat or if he needs to lose weight? Do you wonder, what is normal and how do I best impact my child and his or her eating habits? Well, hi, I'm Dr. Linda Mental, and my book, Raising Healthy Kids in an Unhealthy World, teaches parents how to raise healthy kids in an overscheduled, fast food, video game world by making simple choices, easy changes, and instilling good habits that will improve everyone's life today and forever. Winner of the Mom's Choice Award, Raising Healthy Kids in an Unhealthy World, will give you this confidence, the confidence you need to take charge of your child's eating and raise a healthy weight child.
Raising Healthy Kids in an Unhealthy World. Available on Dr. Linda's website, drlindamental.com, and available online where books are sold.
Welcome back to the Dr. Linda Mental Radio Show. Our topic today is understanding millennials. Who are those people?
They're in our house.
Where did they come from? Well, they came from us.
Yes, they did.
And what are the characteristics of this generation? How do those characteristics affect their relationships, their workplace, their employment, even their church experiences? Interesting. Next week, I get to come back, and we'll continue this conversation and talk specifically about how millennials are impacting the workplace.
I so appreciate your expertise in this area, because you've been on this. You've been looking at these generational shifts and changes, and especially since we both work with millennials and have millennials. I mean, there's an interesting YouTube that we both have seen by Simon Sinek, and his video was viewed on Facebook about 53 million times, 3 million. Views on YouTube. It's this 15-minute video that talks about why millennials are so unhappy and why they're such a challenge in the workplace. I have to be honest, I don't agree with everything he says, and he doesn't discuss faith at all, but he does have some interesting observations. He's the author of Start With Why, How Great Leaders Inspire Everyone to Take Action, and Sinek is considered a leadership expert. That's one of the reasons he's talking about this. He feels millennials are tough to manage, especially if you don't understand them.
Simon is a great researcher, and he's published a lot, and his take on this is worth listening to if you Google Simon Sinek, S-I-N-E-K is his last name. But he has these four characteristics that he sees in millennials, and maybe we could talk about those. The first one, he says, involves parenting, and he doesn't paint a very good picture of the way parents have raised this generation.
Failed parenting strategies, so he's pretty brutal on that. He references the way that parents of millennials made their kids feel special all the time, that we told them that they could have anything they want because they wanted it, and that we made sure that they were in honors classes by complaining and pushing schools even if those kids didn't deserve it.
What he's talking about is what is commonly called helicopter parents, the parent who is over-involved and calls the teacher, how dare you give Johnny a B? Of course he deserves an A or whatever. And there's this hovering, that's the helicopter idea, is this hovering over the child and the teacher. There have even been instances of hovering parents calling a boss, a
kid's first boss when they graduated.
That's brand new. No one's ever done that kind of thing before.
One of the things that he's saying is that a lot of times the teachers go along with it because they didn't want to deal with the parents.
Well, and they're probably helicopter parents themselves, so that's interesting.
Yeah, so that is a phenomenon. And I would encourage you, look in the archives, because we did a show on helicopter parenting and the dangers of that. Mm-hmm. All of this is what he says leaves those kids with lower self-esteem. The intent is to help them,
right.
But it doesn't make them better. It doesn't create toughness in kids. Some of this I agree with, and although I saw this, and we tried to let our kids struggle a little bit and deal with not winning or getting the prize. We're not saying that every parent has done this, but we're saying sometimes this helicopter parenting and these failed strategies where you don't want to make the child upset for any reason and you rescue them all the time, it hasn't had a good impact on some kids.
But how does that lead to lower self-esteem? Because logically, it would seem like it would give them higher self-esteem.
Because the kids say they know. They know. When they get a trophy for participating, they know they've done nothing to deserve
that. They didn't
deserve it. And they can see it. And they have this internal sense that they need to struggle a little bit with this.
That's perfect. I love that. And Pittsburgh Steelers linebacker James Harrison recently, he got in it a little controversial, when he said he had sent back two trophies his son had received because he wanted the boy to earn real trophies. Here's what he actually said. He said, "While I am proud of my boys for everything they do, and I will encourage them until the day I die, these trophies will be given back until they earn a real trophy." That's pretty good parenting.
I loved that. And I think so many parents in America applauded, because I think in some ways parents have felt kind of pushed into this role. Mm. There's something wrong with them if they're letting them struggle a little bit.
That's true.
We know, real life, you don't win and you don't get noticed for participating on your job.
Well, we see that in so many ways. Sinek's second point was about technology. He tells us more about that as he says it fits your area of concern, like internet addiction. People mm-hmm. get addicted. Mm-hmm. Is it dopamine?
Yes,
that
it's
the
dopamine,
brain
the chemical. That's
a hit?
The chemical that is responsible in drug addiction, gambling. We even think sex addiction.
So it's the same hit in the brain?
Yeah, it's the reward center of the brain that's getting a hit, and we think even sometimes it's creating tolerance in people. There may be some truth to this in terms of what he is saying.
Well, hear what Becky has to say.
They spend too much time on their electronic products and don't do face-to-face time with real people.
Becky has a good instinct. She's got the right idea.
But again,
absolutely.
These kids grew up with it. They don't know any other way.
Here's what Cynic says. He says, when you engage in social media, especially cell phone use, the chemical that we've been talking about, dopamine, is released. This is that feel-good chemical in the brain that's associated with all these other addictions. Interesting point he makes. He says, we have age restrictions on the things that can be addictive. And part of the reason we have age restrictions on the things that can be addictive is because the brain has not formed fully until about the age of 25. When you put an addictive substance or something that creates addiction onto a forming brain, it rewires the brain and changes the brain. Wow. It's not just because we think, oh, you're more mature.
Right.
We think that there's a lot of physiological changes. But with social media, there are absolutely no age restrictions or no limit. He contends then that what has happened is this generation has access to this numbing effect through social media when they're stressed. And then he says this pattern by using social media to cope has become hardwired in their brain, which makes sense to me. They turn to these dopamine-producing devices of media, and they don't know how to form then deep and intimate relationships. They don't practice coping. Mm. They don't know how to deal with stress. Mm. They turn to their device or social media for this temporary relief.
Well, it has to feel good to get a like. Everybody's after likes and loves now on Facebook Live. You can get a like or you can get a love flying by. And the social media specifically seem to be created for people who will post a picture. So a lot of people say, oh, you're beautiful. You're great. That's got to be this dopamine hit, right?
Yeah, but look at the research, because they've done research on Facebook. The people who are on it more, and especially if you have multiple platforms, you have a higher rate of depression.
Is that because people don't like you as much?
No, it's because you're on all these social media frames and it's not real life people. If we put it real simple, like Becky said, it's not real life interactions. It's superficial. It's not connecting. It's not really showing you what to do. And it's problematic when your phone and your media devices become your people.
Right.
It doesn't work. And we're finding exactly the opposite in terms of what's happening in relationships.
Look, we know God created us for fellowship.
We do.
And when we fake the fellowship through technology, we miss something.
Well, let me say this. When you're sitting at a dinner table and people are on their devices and they're not talking, it's like you're more connected to the people who are not in the room than the people who are in the room. Think about relationships when all you can do is text somebody. You're not having the face-to-face conversation. Rather, you're dealing with this device, and you're not going to create the relationship experiences that you need to have in order to be intimate and to have a relationship that's going to sustain over time. So this is a real, real concern that we're having.
We'll be right back after this break, and we need to learn more about these millennials and what Simon Sinek thinks about them and what you think about them. Be right back.
This is the Mental Health Minute. Here's Dr. Linda.
Being a generous person can have big benefits for you. Giving your time or your money or even your talent to someone else can obviously help the receiver. But did you know that being generous can roll some positive benefits back on you? This is Dr. Linda Mental, the relationship doctor, and I'm here to share some of the benefits of generosity. Lower blood pressure, reduce stress, a better mood, and even longer life have been identified as benefits of being generous. That's right, physical and mental improvements for you just because you choose to extend something to someone else. What can you give? Your time, your talent, your support, oh, and yes, your money. You see, hoarding money like Scrooge may seem good for your wallet, but it's not so great for your health. One recent study actually showed that stingy behavior increases stress. So take a minute and just ask, what do I have that I can share? Then be generous and see how good you feel when you share something you have with someone else.
So you don't tweet and you don't post? No problem. Check out the relationship doctor, Dr. Linda Mental, on MyFaithRadio.com.
You are listening to the Dr. Linda Mental Show. Today, we're trying to understand millennials, this whole generation, and we're focusing on many of the positives because we see so many of them. We hear good, we hear bad. We're also looking at Simon Sinek, who in a recent YouTube video has talked about four characteristics. The third one, Dr. Linda, is impatience. And I don't think this is unique to this generation, but they seem even more impatient than others. Everything's instant. Turn on the phone, it's instant. You want to watch a movie? You go to Netflix. You didn't get to see all your shows? You binge watch them all. You want to buy something? You go online, you buy it. I was thinking when we said it earlier about this dopamine hit that continues with this kind of thing. There's this rush you get. But when our kids were young, they complained that we put them in front of a TV set as a babysitter. Now I see all the time a phone being put in the hand of a child, even in
an iPad,
stroller or an iPad. Talk about rewiring the brain.
Yeah. And what's interesting about that, when we're looking at sexual addiction, one of the things that is so different, because people will say, well, we've always had pornography, we've always had people addicted to these kinds of images. But the difference is the instantaneous. In the old days, you had to go to a strip club or you had to get this magazine that you ordered in the mail with a brown cover on it. Think about internet pornography. You click dopamine, click dopamine, click dopamine. You click, click. It's so instantaneous. That rush is coming, and you're building tolerance to those things as well. And I think one of the most disturbing things to me is texting, when it replaces that face-to-face interaction. When you are constantly on the phone and you're not practicing those interpersonal skills, that's going to not only translate into your personal relationships, but that can relate to job dissatisfaction, problems, because there's no apps for job satisfaction.
No, there aren't. And when millennials keep their phones with them at all times, even when they politely mute them and it buzzes, they still divert their eyes. I have a young man who comes in for mentoring with me once in a while. And the last time I said, could you put that away, please? Because he puts his phone down, he turns it down, but it's got mute. And every time it buzzes, he stops and looks over it.
You are so right on. And I believe this is going to be two of my blogs. I don't know if they're up yet or not. But one of them is about if the phone is even on the table, it's a distraction to the person. And then the issue is, how many times, Norm, have we been in meetings and we've seen people talking to us, but then they're looking down at their phone? It's so disrespectful of the person who's sitting in front of you.
Exactly. I was in a meeting with high-level executives, and the executive was texting on his phone in the middle of the other guy making a pitch. I was like, really?
It looks like you're not paying attention.
You're not.
Because you can't attend to that. Well, let's go through some of the positives, because Sinek does focus on those negative characteristics.
Right. And his fourth one we'll get to next week, that whole thing about working environment.
Yeah, working environment. We're going to spend a whole show on that.
So the Pew Foundation found some strengths. They aren't an entitled generation, according to Pew, a complex and introspective generation. That's a different term. These young people have weathered many large public traumas. Think about it. Terrorist attacks of September 11th, wars, Great Recession, we're now calling it, the images of war and beheadings from Iraq, Katrina, the hurricane, and for some of the older millennials, the Oklahoma City bombing, Columbine, the shootings. They have gone through these, and because they're so media saturated,
and global,
they live them in a way that perhaps we didn't.
One of the good things about that Pew research that was published in USA Today back in 2012, they found millennials to be more civically and politically disengaged. What does that mean? Well, maybe they're trying to find meaning in some other way. Maybe they're not finding it in the old institutions of politics. They're thinking, I got to figure out a way to serve. It's almost like a throwback to the Peace Corps days where people are looking for meaning. On the negative side, they did also find them more focused on materialistic values, which is no surprise to any of us with our culture, and less concerned about helping the larger community than Generation X. Same with baby boomers. We have more of a push to the big community, but maybe they're trying to find meaning in different pockets and different places. I think that me focus can be shifted with a relationship with Jesus Christ, because he does that to us.
Right. Well, there are also people who have demonstrated that millennials are much more altruistic and they really do want to help. And they take on these big projects, water projects and wells and helping the poor. And look at Tom's Shoes, for pity's sake. I mean, the whole idea of buy a pair of shoes, we're going to give away a pair of shoes. So while they're skeptical of institutions like the church or politics or leaders, they also want to find solutions. And so there's always this two-sided coin with this generation.
Yes, the downside of that is then they don't find church relevant a lot of times, or they don't think that going to church is a really important issue. those who go find meaning and purpose. If they find meaning and purpose and they find that they can serve in their church and they feel like the pastor is preaching the word and they say that the church is not compromising with values, then they seem to be a lot more interested in the church.
Right. It would be fun to do a whole show on the contemporary church and whether we've lost or gained the millennials that many pastors have been seeking. I have found millennials to be incredibly creative. They're very entrepreneurial thinking. They want to go start stuff. We have a young couple in our Sunday school class. She bought a popcorn popper, and she sells popcorn. And they want to reach out. They want to be doing something. They want to have meaning in their life.
And we were talking about it means they'll take risks, even if it means living in their parents' basements.
Yeah, right. Well,
which,
we have one in our basement.
We do, but he's going to school temporarily. But some of them will do that. They'll say, you know what? I don't want to pay money for an apartment. I'm going to try this. Mm-hmm. I'm going to have an idea. I'm going to see what's going to live with my parents for a while and see if I can do it. A lot more risk-taking than I think our generation
is. I think so, too.
They also embrace the values of good citizenship. The Brookings Report says millennials overwhelmingly respond with increased trust, loyalty, as well as a stronger likelihood to buy from those companies that support solutions to specific social issues.
Right,
so much more socially minded.
But let's talk to that for just a second. Online, they believe the opinion of their peers when it comes to buying options.
Let's point them into their place of optimism and where they should be looking towards their hope and where things are meaningful. And that is the hope of Christ and his work in us. We can all get excited about that, right? Exactly. Whether you're a millennial or a boomer or a Gen Y or whatever you are, Gen X, whatever. Despite the negative reports related to self-centeredness, narcissism, and entitlement, we want to think on the positives that can emerge. Every life is transformed when Christ is in us. And we're not the victims of our culture. We don't have to be prescribed by our culture. Rather, we can be aware of the negatives and the pulls towards these things. But with the power of the Holy Spirit in us, we can rise above these things and we can emulate Christ. We're going to continue this conversation about millennials next weekend, talk more specifically about coaching millennials in the workplace and in the church. Many thanks to our producer, Pam Miller, and our engineer, Jamie Hall, our social media director, Cody Gokenhauer, and our post-producer, Chris Underation. Thanks, of course, to you, my guest co-host, Dr. Norm Mintel, who made this show a conversation. From all of us here at Faith Radio, we'll talk to you next weekend. In the meantime, remember, we're here, we're doing life together, and it's better when you don't have to do it alone.
The Dr. Linda Mintel Show is a production of WQLU-FM 90.9 in Lynchburg, Virginia.
Well, thanks for listening to this conversation from the Dr. Linda Mintel Show. These podcasts are available because of listener support. You can make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and helping us grow the impact of the Dr. Linda Mintel Show. Also, take a moment to subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player, and you'll never miss a show.